Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
In association with Viatel Technology Group, IT leaders breathe easy with Viatel Managed Cybersecurity. Viatel.com.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome along to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, we're going to take a closer look at some of the myths surrounding EV ownership. We'll hear about Disney's plans to crack down on password sharing. And as always, I'll answer your tech questions. If you want to get in touch, you can drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. But we're going to start this week with a survey from the AA, which was released on Wednesday, I want to say. The headline from the survey was that AA Ireland survey highlights misinformation as key barrier to electric vehicle adoption. As you know, we have a monthly segment on this programme dedicated to EV reviews, news and myth-busting. So it's only right that Derek Riley of Nevo.ie joins me now to talk through some of these findings. Derek, how are you?
I'm very good. Back myth-busting is my daily job now, Jess. It's great. I'm loving it.
Yeah, I'm sure you are. Like, it's interesting because I think what we've done over the last few years on this programme, I always ask you the stupid question and we try and bust some myths as we go along. But the results of this survey kind of have me a little bit concerned because it does row against some of the things that you and I have spoken about and what I've heard other industry experts talk about as well. When you saw these results, was there one in particular that jumped out at you?
Yeah, it was just the misinformation and in the AA report with Jennifer. It's very much about that battery health, and it was range anxiety, but now the batteries can go across the country, no problem now. So it's a funny one. It's like people are looking for an excuse not to go electric, and that's fine too. As we've always said, Jess, electric vehicles aren't for everybody. Nobody is forcing you to buy one, but there is a European mandate coming in 2035 that will say, do you know what? You won't be able to buy a brand new petrol or diesel car moving forward, but you will be able to buy secondhand ones and they'll be on the road for the next probably 50 years, all going the way people want to go. But yeah, people feel a bit up in arms about something that potentially they were never going to buy anyway. So it's so interesting to read the results.
So one of the ones that kind of caught my eye was that half people agree or don't agree that EVs are better for the environment. Let's start with that one, because that I think was the big notion of EVs when the concept first started floating around, was that it's great for the environment. And obviously there are other benefits as well. But that figure of half like not believing it, what would be your response to that one?
It's very much about where the batteries are coming from. And it's that education piece. This whole survey just says we need to put out more education. It's not about positive spin. It's not about negative spin. Give people the facts. And that's what we do at Nevo. That's what we did at the recent show in the RDS. It's when somebody asks a question, give them the information and then they can make up the decision themselves. So it may be, okay, you don't think that the car is better for the environment or is less of an impact on the environment. Initially, an electric vehicle, yes, does take more carbon to produce. But after servers are after finding as the grid gets cleaner and cleaner as you're charging it, excuse me, you're talking maybe 15 to 20,000 kilometers of actually driving it. And from that point onwards, that electric vehicle is not producing any more carbon. It doesn't start to become carbon neutral, but that petrol or diesel car is still emitting carbon every single day of its life, be that hybrid, be that mild hybrid, et cetera, et cetera. And so that understanding that, you know what, yes, it is more intensive of carbon at the start, but as you use that car and drive that vehicle and depending on how you charge it, but even if you charge it directly off the grid, and that'll be another thing people throw back at myself, oh, it's only as clean as the electricity going into it, but our grids are getting cleaner and cleaner all the time with more renewable energy. And so where the battery is coming from, the chemistry of the battery, cobalt is a great one, and the images of unfortunate children in Africa mining cobalt. But what do people say then when you say, oh, well, there's cobalt-free batteries now? And so it's literally taking a myth, dispelling it, and they pull up another one, and you have to dispel that one as well. But I enjoy it, don't get me wrong, but it's all about educated buyers, understanding electric vehicles, and making sure it's right for them, where what you're getting is uneducated people thinking they know about electric vehicles that they're never going to buy anyway, and putting it out on social media and even the media in general, and even the report. And it's great that AA did these reports, but talking about that 1 million electric vehicles by 2030, that goal is no longer the government's goal. So to quote it in a brand new report is unfortunately, again, misleading. The target is 30% of the private vehicle fleet by 2030. That 1 million soundbite or headline is gone now. And so when I see it at the start of a report or a survey, I go, well, straight away, you don't know what the actual government target is anymore. And so should I really take this survey, you know, seriously?
Mm. And I think that is a really important point here, because I actually welcome all of these surveys and reports, because I think it's a good litmus test. I wouldn't, you know, bet my life on it or bet my house on it at all. But I do think these little snapshots, because every time you're on the show, like you're on at least once a month, and every time you're on, people will email in. And we're still getting, it's happening less, but we still get the same people who get in touch saying, actually, if you fact check it, it's not better for the environment. Or if you fact check it, the range isn't as good as they're saying it is on X, Y, and Z car. There's an element of Groundhog Day about this. And I'm slightly baffled by it, because there's more and more information out there if people just took the time to dig a little bit deeper.
Yeah, for sure. And there's also more misinformation out there. And there's more, and the algorithm of social media versus media, the algorithm of social media, whether it's a car going on fire, whether it's a car involved in an accident, whether it's whatever it may be, the algorithm of social media loves the fact that people are engaging, commenting, sharing it, all that kind of stuff. And the ones that engage the most are the ones that are potentially most misinformed. And so and they're in that bubble. And we had this with vaccinations a couple of years ago. I don't know what it is, Jess. Now, every day somebody wakes up and goes, OK, I can see that fuel prices are after going up since the 1st of April, and it's costing me a bit more to run this petrol or diesel vehicle. I'm going to go out and start to research about electric vehicles. So as much as myself and yourself, Jess, have spoken about this over the last number of years, it's very much day one for a lot of people every day. And so, yes, there is an element of this Groundhog Day stuff going on. But like any new technology, there's going to be learning. There's going to be education. It's a bit like I knew some people that didn't want to get a smartphone or even a mobile phone because they were worried that there might be somewhere where they wouldn't have coverage.
Yeah.
And now everybody has a smartphone or even a mobile phone. And electric vehicles is a bit of a funny one because they feel like the government are forcing it upon them.
Yeah.
And as I said, we've got 11 years before you'll be able to not buy a new petrol or diesel vehicle. So that's 2, 3, 4 more cycles if you take 2 to 3 year cycles, depending on your electric vehicle. So by then, charging infrastructure won't be an issue. Used car markets won't be an issue. Battery health understanding won't be an issue, but we already have that data from other markets. So again, yes, electric vehicle sales March versus March of last year are down over 40%. 2023 sales were probably the end of 2022 orders that weren't fulfilled. So it's probably a bit of a falsehood. Overall sales are slightly down, 14% down on last year, but the numbers of electric vehicles that were actually sold, because the numbers are so small currently, like at the moment, so far this year, we're at around 8,000 EV sold. Okay. And the way that the media are talking about it, you'd think it was 800,000 versus just over 9,000 that were sold this time last year. So an extra 1,300 people bought an EV last year versus this year, in the grand scale of things. But you know what, Jess? It makes for good media. It makes for good headlines. And those that like to hate electric vehicles will jump on that. Now, if electric vehicle sales go up next month, I wonder will there be as much furry about it.
Yeah, you've hit on the nail on the head there. I don't get the hate and the outrage about EVs, because if it's not for you, then just don't buy one. Or if you're curious about it, ask the question. And, you know, there are, like, obviously you can get a hybrid vehicle as well. But this thing of trying to tar the whole EV industry just because you don't get it or you're not interested in it, it kind of makes my brain bend a little bit.
And you're getting this a bit more and more, because obviously you feature me on the show and you're in public transport taxis on a regular basis, and people will start technology. It is technology, and that's your forte. So they're asking you about it as well. So you've seen where we've come from and how our conversation has progressed over the last number of years on this slot on the show. But as I go back to today, the show is going out today on air or on podcast. And today is the first day somebody's thought, you know what? Oh, actually, I'm going to go electric. And now I need to start understanding, okay, how long is the battery going to last? Where am I going to charge it? All of those kind of things. How many apps do I need on the phone? What difference does the weather make? All the things that we've chatted about. And as you said, Jess, you can start going back on the different podcasts and listen about it. So unfortunately, there is an element of Groundhog Day. But listen, you know what? Happy to run through the report and go through it. And as you say, it's definitely a litmus test. And what is the sentiment of that 1,000 people that they surveyed? And yes, you can extrapolate that out into the majority of the population. But sometimes the most vocal anti-EV proponents, anti-EV opponents are the loudest ones. And listen, my grandmother had a great saying, empty vessels make most noise. But I'm not saying that these are people are empty vessels, but yeah, some people really hate electric vehicles, and I think they hate me then because I'm pro electric vehicles, but I'm not forcing anybody to go electric.
No, and I think, anyway, look, but I would, if you are someone who is genuinely skeptical, not from a point or place of rage, will you please get in touch with us and send in your thoughts and concerns? Because, Derek, that might be the way to go about it, is if we get in black and white from somebody who just doesn't like them, and maybe we could talk through it in detail, because I'm genuinely curious about it. If it's something that is better for the environment, as you said, in the longer term, but also if it saves you money in terms of the cost that you're putting on the car, like, I don't get the skepticism or the negativity.
Yeah, and it's going to come down to the environmental stuff is lovely. And we all say that we want to be more green and eco-conscious and all the rest of it. But as we've mentioned before, Jess, it comes down to the actual cost of somebody in their pocket. And so with electric vehicles, there's a bit of a thing there where there's a green premium. There's the price of an equivalent electric versus a combustion engine vehicle is more. So straight away, that's an easy target for the naysayers to say, oh, it's more expensive, I can't afford it. But now when you look at the likes of the Peugeot E2008, small compact SUV, versus its top trim petrol version. And so trim for trim, they're fairly similar. They have all the bells and the whistles. It's roughly the same price. So price parity is starting to come into it. So, okay, now you're telling me that the cost of actually getting that electric vehicle versus the petrol or diesel equivalent is the same. Okay, I can't use that as something to beat Derek over the head with a big stick. So now, as you said, the running costs. If you're able to charge at home, so 80% of Ireland have the ability to have a driveway and put in a charger. An electric vehicle is potentially going to save you a lot of money because you can choose a different tariff and night rate. Now, Jess, there are 20% of people that don't have that ability. And yes, the government need to work on that so that overnight neighborhood charging is cost effective and allowing you to charge at a cheaper rate. And so the running cost needs to be taken into account. And again, this is where you're going to crunch the numbers. I got an email yesterday from a couple in Sligo that have two cars. They want to start thinking about going electric. And I said, OK, first thing you need to do, figure out what your range is like. What do you need on a regular basis? Last week, I was working with a company with 110 vans. First thing you have to do, let's look at what your vans are doing on a daily basis. And then lastly, then the servicing of these vehicles from 200 moving parts on an electric vehicle to 2,000 moving parts on a electric vehicle. And then you'll hear about battery replacements costing thousands and thousands. Again, misinformation and disinformation. It's all about asking the manufacturers, what's it cost to replace that battery? How many batteries have you actually replaced? Can it replace a cell? Can it replace a module? What's the cost of all of this? Tires is another one. I'll let you jump in there, Jess, before I keep talking.
I think it's worth having these conversations and going through it, because if people have genuine questions or concerns, that's why we have you on the shows, to try and talk through these things, not only when surveys come out, but just in general, because I do think the more you know, the better. But when it comes to the assessing whether it's for you or not, because you've said at the top and you've said it multiple times over the years in this show, EVs aren't for everyone. So who, like, who's in that bracket from your vantage point of, do you know what, don't even bother because it's not the right fit at this moment in time?
People who can't charge at home would be number one on that list. So if you haven't got the ability to use an overnight charging tariff, they'd be, so an EV may work for you, just be more expensive. And so it's not about will it or won't it, it's how much inconvenience do you want, or how much you want it to be not as cost effective as it could be. So people who don't have a home charger, reliant on public charging, but more and more workplaces are getting it in and then shopping around and understanding where your cheapest neighborhood charging is. So for example, the EV drivers in my neighborhood know one of the supermarkets, actually they're selling electricity cheaper than anywhere else. So they'll walk up to the supermarket, those that can't charge at home, and they'll plug in and it takes them 4 minutes to walk home. So you start to understand it. So that's the first thing, people who can't charge at home. The next one then, I was talking to somebody recently who is on the road for business, and they're in retail and they have to drive around the country to different retail outlets that they are regional managers for. And I said, EVs potentially aren't for you at the moment, just because that charging network that you will rely on a daily basis may not be fit for purpose just yet. Getting better, absolutely. And I can see the planner permissions and I can know what chargers are coming where and where they're going to be in the hubs, etc. What I don't agree with is somebody that's saying, I won't go electric now because I go down to Galway twice a year and I don't want to stop with the kids for an extra 30 minutes somewhere. And then I said, well, you probably have to stop with the kids anyway for 30 minutes. And they say, oh God, yeah, we couldn't drive Galway all the way without stopping with the kids for 30 minutes. I was like, well, why don't you just stop at somewhere where there's an EV charger for 30 minutes? And they're like, oh, right. So you mean I don't have to stand there and hold the charger for 30 minutes? I can actually get out and go into the motor services and actually use the restrooms, have a break, food, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And so EVs will work for you. You just have to plan more. And those people that say, oh, I don't want to be stopping and charging. We're in a climate crisis. And I don't like to get on my soapbox about this, but we're going to have to change how we live and consume and all of those stuff. And I think there's a bit of a blinkers at the moment where people say, I don't want to change how I live, but we're going to have to. And if it means me driving to Galway, having to stop for 30 minutes, or not drive at 120 kilometers an hour, I'm going to have to drive at 100 kilometers an hour. This is another big one that I get. Oh, I couldn't be driving at 100 kilometers an hour. I want to drive at 120 kilometers an hour. That's fine. You're wanting the speed, you're going to lose out on range. And that's the same for petrol or diesel or electric vehicle. Oh, if it gets cold in Ireland, the range won't be as effective in an electric vehicle. Absolutely. But you do know that in a petrol and a diesel car, when it gets cold as well, its efficiency goes down by 15 to 20% as well, the same as an electric vehicle. And I think that we're going to have to just do these on a monthly basis, Jess. And as stuff comes out and news, and as I drive new ones and bigger range and bigger batteries, we're going to that. But yeah, if people want to email in and ask a genuine question, I'm going to give the honest answer, the fact-based answer. Mm. And so that they get the information and then they can do with it as they wish and process it. But I think, yes, there's an element of this survey, but also that sales of electric vehicles going down. There is a bit of flux in the market at the moment and resale values and used car prices. But in the United Kingdom, which would be about 18 months ahead of Ireland, used electric vehicles are the fastest selling used car in the UK market. So they're selling quicker than petrol, diesel, hybrid. People want electric vehicles more than any other type. And that's around the corner for Ireland. And people think that this downward spiral is going to keep happening. Oh, people, oh God, they were conned in buying their electric vehicle. It's not going to be the case. We're going to be proven right because the technology is just better. And that's, and you know that, Jess, in many aspects of technology, when it is better, it will be the one that succeeds overall.
Email your questions, techtalk@newstalk.com, and even your anecdotes, your experiences, even if it's third or fourth hand, send in what you're hearing and we'll go through them. And we will, as Derek said, or he will, because he's the expert here, give the factual based answer. It may not be all rosy for EVs, but at the same time, it's better to get the facts rather than picking up bits and pieces here, there and everywhere. The email address is techtalk@newstalk.com. And of course, you can visit nevo.ie, which is an excellent portal, and it's your go-to place for all things electric vehicles. Derek, as always, thank you so much and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Jess.
Now, you may have heard me talking about it during the week, but myself and Kathleen McNamee from Off The Ball have signed up to run the Women's Mini Marathon over the June Bank Holiday weekend. We're in training mode at the moment, and I think we're excited, but I know for sure that we're both very nervous and petrified. But we are doing it for an incredible cause, which is the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre, which is one of our charity partners here at Newstalk. They've been working since 1979 to prevent the harm and heal the trauma of sexual violence. Every single euro that we raise will go towards supporting their work, and we would be eternally grateful if you had a few quid to donate. You can do so by going to idonate.ie/newstalkofftheball. So that's idonate.ie/newstalkofftheball. I'll be talking about it quite a bit between now and the June Bank Holiday weekend, but every single cent makes a difference. So please give what you can, if you can. I would be super grateful. Now, when we come back here on News Talk, we'll take a closer look at Disney's crackdown on password sharing.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Now, it's an exciting week for podcast nerds such as myself because of this.
Right after September 11th, we created a brand new criminal justice system at Guantanamo Bay, a prison and a court to deal with people we suspected of being terrorists. To do what we wanted to do at Guantanamo, we pushed aside the old rules for detaining prisoners of war so we could interrogate people how we wanted and hold them indefinitely without charging them with a crime. Maybe you have an idea of what it's like to work at Guantanamo Bay. Put that aside for a second.
You know, you're on 42 square miles. You've got like five great beaches.
I partied my ass off in Gitmo.
Just everyone was getting drunk and getting laid.
I mean, I love Gitmo. Like, it's La La Land.
We're like a Disneyland employee.
let's talk about that comparison there.
Oh no, that was a joke. Definitely a joke. It's nothing like Disneyland.
Our mission today is to provide safe, humane, legal, and transparent.
The U.S. government has its own story about what's been happening inside Guantanamo all these years.
Safe, legal, transparent care,
custody, and control.
But we wanted the people who served at Guantanamo and survived Guantanamo to tell their stories. Now that they've left Guantanamo, what would they say now that they couldn't say then? A lot, as it turns out.
Chaos. Simply put, it was chaotic.
You think your Allah is going to help you? You think your Quran is correct? You know, it's a bunch of garbage. It's a blah, blah, blah.
Rights? What rights? Nobody knows you exist here.
He wasn't tortured. He wasn't physically beaten. He wasn't tortured. He was beaten in the respect that we won, he lost.
So when you are tortured by someone who doesn't believe in torture, how can this guy who believes in human rights doing this to me?
This is something that they would never have made public, but the day of the riot, morale was never higher because we got to kick their asses and get away with it. And that's the God honest truth.
Yeah, that is the voice and the iconic music of Serial, the podcast, which is back with a new series that looks at the history of Guantanamo. And it's told by the people who lived through the key moments in Guantanamo's evolution. If you've never heard any of the Serial productions, I would highly recommend you go back and listen to the very first one, which was released in 2014. It tells the story of Adnan Syed, who was arrested for a murder, but it's not black and white. It's one of the most compelling and heartbreaking stories you will ever hear. And it's one of the best productions I've ever heard. So go back, listen to the first series. I wasn't mad about the ones in between, but this new series already has me hooked. I have listened to the first episode and loved every single second of it. So I would highly recommend it if you are looking for a new podcast to binge. Now, sticking with entertainment, Disney is said to be cracking down on password sharing, following in the footsteps of Netflix. Tech journalist Emmett Ryan is with me now. Emmett, how are you?
I'm good, Jess. And this seems a bit interesting in terms of timing.
It really does. Before we get to the Disney case, let's just look back at what Netflix did, because this was talked about, it was speculated on, there was a whole host of debate and outrage about it, but it seems like it kind of worked for them.
Did, yeah. And I suppose I was a little surprised it did as well, because so for context, password sharing isn't exactly something anyone's, you know, new to, is the best way to put it, because it's been done quite a lot. It was quite often a matter of convenience more than cost for some people. Obviously, for a lot of people, it was cost. But essentially, say, you know, you and your partner might live in different places, but you want to share the same account. It was just easier, is the easiest way of putting it, for people to have that one account. And so, you know, you would both have the same password, same account. But obviously, that limited the number of purchases of the subscription, which was a key thing, and that's what they need to do to drive these up. And Netflix has reached profitability, Disney Plus is still shy of it, and it wants to get there, and it feels that it could get a boost from doing this. Now, it's doing this shortly after a price increase as well. So as of the end of last month, the annual cost of a Disney Plus subscription in Ireland has gone up from $89.90 to $109.90, so it's a 20 euro increase. And so they're doing it right after a price increase as well, which I don't think is an accident, in that they're trying to make sure that, you know, if they're going to do it, they're going to get the maximum value from these added subscriptions.
Mm. And let's stick with the value point for a second, because when Disney first launched, I signed up because I wanted to watch Hamilton. That's why I signed up to Disney initially. But I was struck by the breadth of content on the platform. When you look at what it offers in comparison to the likes of Prime, Netflix and all the rest, is it good value for the consumer even at the hiked up price?
Gosh, it really depends what you're into. Like, there is a lot of content on Disney, but as with all these services, there's two things that they're both trying to use as key selling points. One is volume, but say, well, one's a key selling point, one's a detraction. One is volume, but the volume will often include some, well, stuff you're never going to even consider watching. And I mean, when I say you, I mean literally any viewer. Like, they're just there to fill out and make it look bigger. The other, though, of course, is the original content. So that's a mixture of stuff that's it's exclusive to that platform, but obviously also the TV style programs that are being produced. And we've seen that with all the vast amount of Marvel and Star Wars spin-off series they're trying to use to sort of drive consumers towards the service. And Netflix, obviously, with its original series, is the same. Prime has done it to a lesser degree, but also with a more focused degree, I would say, with its ones. And it's sort of a key selling point of all of these is, well, you can only watch this show, which everybody's watching here. The Apple situation with that is quite funny, in that Apple has had some of the most award-winning shows on streaming platforms, but most people who have Apple TV don't really watch them, because it's more for their broader Apple subscription, so they aren't necessarily the heaviest selling point of that service, which is unusual, because there are some great shows on Apple TV Plus, I should point out. But yeah, with Disney doing this, it's very much a case of they want to have more people paying for the service, essentially. Now, I always felt that there was one natural barrier to people oversharing, which I felt should do the job, which is why I'm surprised Netflix with the big boost, which is most of these have a device limit, in that you can only have a login on so many devices. And I don't mean like consecutively, I mean literally once you've hit a certain number of devices logged in, you've got to go and get a device removed and add in a new one, which is effort basically, which is obviously one thing people generally try to avoid when it comes to convenience. So this, I always felt the device limit was probably going to be enough. Obviously, you see the Netflix numbers that I was wrong there, and I'm thinking Disney figure, well, that probably isn't enough in its own right, that you can't have, say, a laptop, a phone, a TV, and maybe another device. I think most of them, it's a 6 or 7 device limit you can be logged in on at all. And I think, again, I stress, it's not consecutively, as in once you've logged in on that 7th device, you've got to remove one of the other devices before you put in a new device. And so I always thought that was a sufficient barrier. Obviously, it wasn't.
Mm. That used to really annoy me on Now TV. You know, if I was trying to watch something on my phone or my tablet and then I wanted to watch it on the actual TV, you'd have to remove a device. And I think back in the day, I don't know if it's still the case, but you had to leave a gap, like it was a few hours or 24 hours or something like that before the device would be removed, and then you could add another one. So that was a barrier to entry. But in terms of how this technology works, one of the questions that crops up quite a lot is, well, what if I'm traveling for work? Or what if my childminder wants to use my account and so on? like, it's not that you can't use your account wherever you want. It's, I suppose it's more for long-term use. So say, for example, if you log in consecutively at a second address, you know, over 30 days, they might cop it and you get a prompt going, change your billing address to this one, otherwise you won't have access. Is that how it works?
I'm guessing that's going to be how it works out. But to be honest, again, even with that, though, like I mentioned the situation earlier, like, you know, two people who are like, you know, in a relationship but live in separate places for any sorts of reasons, you know, or someone might have two addresses because of the way they work. It's very practical. Like there are plenty of people who would commute, say, from Belfast to London for three nights of the week to work. You know, that's a very common commute in the north, that, like, you know, they would naturally have two addresses they'd work out of. So it would look like they're password sharing, but they're not. They're using the same device, even though they have two regular locations. So obviously those are exceptional, but the big one is obviously people thinking, well, one person gets it and the whole family starts using it all over the country. And I think that's what they're trying to crack down on.
Yeah, and I think we're at the stage now where people are trying to balance value for money alongside getting access to the services that they need and want. Because, you know, like we had this in the office here in News Talk when Ted Lasso happened. Everyone was talking about it. People signed up to Apple TV to get it. But we, the consumer, don't want to end up screwed. Like, you don't want to be penalized for your living situation, your working situation, your financial situation. Like, it does feel like the streaming services are coming out on top every single time.
Carol, though, like I've been saying for quite a while, we're going to reach a point, especially with the squeeze on disposable income, where people are going to start sacrificing services. So it's a case of trying to have the service that has the most value is going to be very, very important. Like, and even Bob Iger, in his statement about the Disney Plus crackdown, described Netflix as the gold standard in streaming services. So he doesn't think Disney is quite there yet. He knows that if people are choosing between Netflix and Disney, they're choosing Netflix. And but obviously he's thinking people are going to choose obviously more than just a single one. They're going to choose a couple, and what they get rid of is a question. So he wants to be in a position where, well, two things happen. One, Disney is definitely above the Primes and the Apple TV Pluses of this world, which it certainly would be above the latter in terms of its a broad appeal. But whether it's about Prime, I suppose, is more of a debate, and it's very much a subjective one. But in terms of sort of, you know, generating revenue, I think that's the key thing for Bob Iger, is that per customer revenue has to go up as far as they're concerned in order for it to be able to be a sufficient service, essentially, to make money for Disney, which is the purpose of this existing, don't forget.
Mm, absolutely, yeah. Look, these things are all businesses. And one thing that we spoke about before was live sport coming to streaming services. Like, what happens if, whether it's Wimbledon, whether it's, I don't know, like the Six Nations next year, whatever it is, what if that goes to a streaming service? Do you see that as a massive push or pull for people to sign up to a streaming platform?
It's definitely going to be a driver when we see live sports, you know, go over. The question is to how and when. Like, it's been huge for Apple with the MLS in the US. It has definitely driven a lot of Apple TV Plus subscriptions for them. So for them, that's been a huge success already, even though it's only one league in one country, and it's not even one of the bigger football leagues. But when you have complete ownership of a product like that, a complete ownership of a league or a competition, it's a huge plus. It's when it's split up, which is kind of why Amazon pulled out of the Premier League. Amazon had a couple of nights a year of Premier League football, but because it wasn't a regular sort of, you know, they had this slot week in, week out, they felt they weren't getting the value of it, and so that's what they pulled out. Yet they're also investing in other live sport, and we see Netflix obviously have finally, after years and years of complete resistance to live streaming, have sort of broken through, and they'll be showing live sport going forward. Obviously they've signed a deal with WWE for their product, but also they have the Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson fight which will be live with Netflix as well. So you're seeing them go over there, and that's entirely, again, they're seeing it as a case of that'll drive subscriptions. But at the same time, also across all these services, I wouldn't be surprised at all if we see them also see it as a way of adding another tier, a way of increasing the average revenue per user, because when you're buying in live sports, there is a serious cost with them, and if you're going to make the value out of them, typically speaking, you're going to have to actually add to the price of the tier you're charging at in order to get more people in. Now with some sports, that's going to be a red line for them even selling the rights. Like the NFL is a classic example in that if they were to sell the rights, which they have previously to Amazon, for example, if Amazon had added an extra tier cost, for the NFL. The NFL would have clamped down on that pretty hard. But like for most leagues, the English Premier League, it's a pretty normal concept to them. So I think we're going to see added tier costs for getting access in live sports if these platforms start buying in more of them.
Yep. And again, it's all business, baby. That's just how it works. The other thing that's been thrown around quite a bit is the notion of introducing ads. So you could subscribe for a cheaper fee, but you'd have to sit through ads. Like for you yourself, like, would that put you off? Would you want to save £3 or £4 a month if you had to sit through ads every 20 minutes or whatever?
I mean, I think for a lot of people, it's very annoying because one of the upsides they saw in subscribing to streaming was they wouldn't have to watch ads. And now suddenly what they've been doing for, you know, years is going to be taken away from them. And it's like, kind of, that's one of the reasons I subscribed to streaming in the first place, was to get ads, was to avoid ads. And like YouTube Premium, myself and a friend of mine, Rob, we both agree it's probably the one service we'll never give up, because we don't get bombarded with ads while we're watching YouTube now. And also you can listen to stuff with the screen closed on your phone, for example. But I suppose for some people, certainly they will be willing to pay the extra, but there's an element as well of making sure they don't over push what they're trying to, you know, charge you consumers for. Because again, most consumers of a Netflix or Disney Plus, but especially Netflix, I would say, feel that like part of the fee they're already paying is managed to cover the not seeing ads part. So it's definitely a tightrope.
It is. I don't know if I would personally want the, because I'm just impatient. I don't know if I'd be bothered sitting through ads. I'd rather pay the £3 or £4 extra a month. But again, that's a...
Will you pay the £3 or £4 extra a month, or will you just dump the service? And that's the real debate.
Yeah, and I suppose that is the better way of framing it. My final question, and this is something that I've been thinking about quite a bit in recent weeks, is where's the price increases going to stop, or when are they going to stop? Because if you are paying for the top tier Netflix plan, that's £21 a month, which is a hefty sum of money. And that's before you buy your phone, buy your TV, whatever device you watch on. Like, are these companies going to get away with continuing to increase the price before the consumer goes, I hear, lads, hang on a second, I'll just go back to terrestrial TV?
Short version, sorry to break the news. And the rationale is quite simple in that... they know that they can go to a certain point before the consumer makes that choice. They've done the sums, they've done the hard maths, and they know just how far they can go without, you know, being detrimental to them in terms of overall subscriber numbers. So they've worked out the sort of, you know, the cost benefit analysis, and they know where they can go to maximize profit. So that's why they're going with these. So the price increases are only ever going to keep coming.
Great news. Thank you so much, as always.
Don't for that. Be the voice of joy when I come on the show.
I very much appreciate it. Emmett Ryan, thank you so much, as always.
Thanks for having me.
Right, let me know what you think. Have you reached your ceiling with subscription payments? Have you ditched one of the services? What one did you ditch? If you're contemplating ditching one, why? Drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com. I don't mind telling you, I ditched Apple TV recently because the price went up and I just wasn't watching enough. We have Netflix. I think my boyfriend pays for Prime. I don't pay for Prime. But beyond that, I really am cutting back in terms of the number of services I subscribe to. I'm just not watching enough. And I realised that these, aside from, as Emmett mentioned there, the annual subscription for Disney, the majority of them are monthly payments. So if I have a busy month where I'm out and about, or maybe I'm reading more or listening to audiobooks more, I have no issue cancelling and then resubscribing again. Just save yourself money. I also, do you know what I realised I was subscribed to this month that I forgot? Was Audible. I was paying for Audible, which was £12 a month, and I haven't used it in quite a while. So I cancelled it. So that's £12 a month I've saved myself. But it's definitely worth going through, seeing what you're paying for, and then cutting back if you don't use the services. It just makes sense. But let me know what you think. You can email me techtalk@newstalk.com. When we come back after this short break, I will answer your tech questions. Stay tuned.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Yeah, this is the final part of this week's Tech Talk. And as ever, I'm going to answer your tech questions. If you have one, you can drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com. First up, we have Susan. She says, hi, Jess. I've been notified by my mobile network that my bill is going up yet again this week. I'm fed up with the annual increase. And so after 15 years, wow, I'm going to make the move to a cheaper plan. What would you recommend, please? I live in Kildare, if that makes any difference in terms of coverage. Yeah, Susan, the bills are going up across the board pretty much, which is frustrating. Most networks do annual price increases now to reflect inflation, and then some add a little bit on top to cover, I suppose, the investment that they're putting into the development of the network and so on. What I would say, and I've said it a million times now, is that the digital mobile networks offer incredible value. There's quite a few players on this field now. So we've got GoMo, there's Clear Mobile, there's 48, there's the likes of Tesco Mobile, Virgin Media as well. There's so many players there, right? A lot of my friends are with GoMo, and based on my chats with them and their experience, I would highly recommend it. You're getting all of your calls, all of your texts and all of your data, as well as 14 gig of EU roaming for $14.99 a month. And once you sign up, that's your price. They're not going to increase it. So in terms of value for money, it's pretty hard to beat. Now, when it comes to the digital mobile networks, there are some things to be aware of. Firstly, everything takes place online. So when you're signing up, you go to the GoMo website and you do the process. You literally fill in a form and then your number will be ported over. That's the height of it. So the sign up happens online, as does the customer service. So if you've got any issues or anything like that, you have to interact on the website. Again, a few of my friends have had one or two questions. They've dealt with the chat on the website. It hasn't been a big deal, but you just need to be aware of it. There's no physical store for you to dip into if you've got a question. Also worth bearing in mind that this isn't the kind of plan that will entitle you to an upgrade on your phone. So when it comes to upgrading your phone or buying a new phone, you'll need to buy it outright. So just bear those things in mind. I think if you sat down and did the maths, you would still find that this is excellent value. If you are due to get a new phone, or if you need a new phone, look at refurbished models. You'll save a bucket ton of money, and then you'll be saving a lot on your phone bill as well. In terms of you living in Kildare, GoMo is an Air product. They're pretty great in terms of coverage. They've got good geographical coverage, I think is the term. But your best bet is to go to comreg.ie. And then if you put in your Air code, it'll tell you what the story is with the coverage and what networks are best in your region. So if GoMo doesn't work, look at Clear Mobile. Clear Mobile is Vodafone's digital mobile network, and then 48 is Three's digital mobile network. So there are plenty of options out there, but I think you're absolutely right. Move away from legacy bills, sign up to a digital mobile plan, and save yourself a ton of cash. Next, we have Niall. And Niall says, my 7-year-old is YouTube obsessed. She loves watching other kids play with toys, play with slime and all the rest. But the ads drive her, and by extension, me, bananas. I'm contemplating paying for the ad-free version. What would you recommend? I pay for it, Niall. I pay for YouTube Premium, and I have done for quite a few years now. Just like your 7-year-old, I love YouTube. I think of all the streaming services I pay for, YouTube is the last one I would ditch, to be honest. Not only does the subscription for YouTube Premium get rid of the ads, but you can also have videos on in the background. Now, I don't know if that's something that would matter to your child, but I love it because it means that if I'm listening to interviews or music or whatever, I can have my screen locked and it plays in the background. It's also possible when you've got YouTube Premium to take videos offline. So if you're going to be in an area, like say, for example, if you have a flight coming up with your 7-year-old, you could download some of the slime videos for her from YouTube and store them locally on your device. And that way she could be entertained while you fly. So I'm a big fan of the YouTube subscription. And it's 12 quid a month, which, you know, it's no small amount of money. So just make sure it's worth it to you and your child. As I said, based on my usage, it's definitely worth it for me. I would, to be honest, sooner get rid of Netflix than YouTube just based on how much time I spend on it. But that's just my opinion. So there you go. And finally for this week, Tim has been on. He said, "Hi Jess, I have 12 phones I no longer use, some ancient, but I'm slow to recycle due to information on the phones falling into wrong hands. How does one safely recycle the phones?" Tim, this is an excellent question and one that crops up quite often. I think most of us have drawers full of tech, not like knowing what to do with them. The first thing I would recommend you do is go into the settings, search for factory reset and run that process. So it'll wipe all of your personal information, all of the information off the phone. Ensure that that process is complete and then bring your 12 phones to a Wii recycling facility. You can find your nearest location if you go to mywaste.ie. So it's mywaste.ie. Put in your area, region, air code, whatever, and find your nearest centre. And they will ensure that the phones are safely recycled. So again, the website is mywaste.ie. It's definitely worth going through the tech junk drawer that I'm sure every single one of us has at home. Like I'm in the process of moving out of my apartment. And holy gosh, I have buckets and buckets filled with old tech. But I am slightly insane and very sentimental about everything. So I haven't thrown any of it out. But I will. I promise I will. At some stage down the line. That's it from me this week. If you have any tech questions or if you're looking for a recommendation, you can drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com and I will answer as many as I can next week. But if you don't already, make sure you subscribe to the Tech Talk podcast on the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud or wherever you get your podcasts. I'll be back with Shane Akira on Monday's Newstalk Breakfast. But in the meantime, have a great weekend.